Hello, bisexuals! Welcome back to another episode of The Bisexual Agenda. I'm your host, Kit Scales. I have finally returned. Happy Gemini season, happy Mercury retrograde, and happy Pride. Today, I'm talking to my Scorpio partner in crime, Pip, about femme and what it means to us, and Elizabeth about gatekeeping and biphobia when it comes to people identifying as femme, and kind of just trying to make all the baby gays feel better about being femme and like they are queer enough, because you are. If you want to message me and talk about anything we covered in the podcast, I'm always up for having a chat. And if you want to tell me about your ideas about femme and what it means to you, I would also love that. Obviously, we are just two bisexuals talking about our ideas and our identities. I also want to say, please check the description box for all the references from this episode. And if you want the complete reading list that we did for this episode, just message me on Instagram at the Bisexual Agenda Pod, and I can share that with you. We also have a few trigger warnings for this episode, so they're all listed there as well. We do cover some biphobia and transphobia, and there's just a few things to be aware of before listening, and I'll put timestamps for the different segments. I love you guys. I hope you're having a good Monday or whatever day it is when you're listening to the podcast, and I hope you enjoy the episode.
Do you think Sugar Babes, do you think Mucha Bianna has like really strong dyke energy?
As a band, if they're not queer, they're honorary. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
It felt like it came out with an extra syllable. So one of the really great things about Harper is that we are both extreme pop heads. And so we spend a lot of our evenings together just going down like YouTube rabbit holes of like classic noughties and early 10s pop. So yeah, we've watched a lot of Sugar Babes videos recently, and the Push the Button video is unhinged.
Aren't they in a lift?
Yes, that is the exact one.
They were like, we're going for a literal vibe with this video.
Yeah, and it's just so low budget. They've like cast male love interests in it, but then they've done it so like the love interest is like kind of a male version of the singer. Like, yeah,
interesting.
Like Keisha's is like the one black love interest, like, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, they've like, just they have to look the same, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird.
Okay, I can't think of an intro. Well, today we're talking about being femme icons, and to be fair, this was inspired by a listener, because someone messaged me saying that they wanted an episode about like being comfortable being femme and like learning to love it, because I do think a couple of people who are younger who listen to my podcast, when they're like coming out or like trying to get involved in queer circles and things like that, I think they feel invisible because they're femme, but also self-conscious about whether people view them as legitimate members of the queer community, which I think is just like amplified if you're bisexual, because you're like, there could be people here who don't think I belong here in literally any scenario, because when you're hanging out with straight people, they're like, oh, you're a little freak, and when you're hanging out with gay people, they're like, okay, but like, you're really just gay, or if you have a boyfriend, they're like, oh, like,
like, as a bisexual non-binary femme who's like, my previous partner was a man, my current partner is like another non-binary person who I refer to as my boyfriend, because that's the language we're comfortable with. I definitely feel a lot of that like invisibilizing and exclusion, you know, like in the way other people talk about how they perceive me. And I guess for me, learning to kind of embrace being femme and take what I need from that and leave what I don't need has been really helpful, because I definitely wouldn't, like, I'm not a high femme person at all, but I think quite some of being femme is like projected onto me because of, you know, although I'm non-binary, I'm read as a woman by most people, and I don't want to have short hair or a mullet, and I don't want to bind my chest or whatever, you know, like I don't, androgyny or like masculinity doesn't appeal to me. So
I guess it's like the added expectations of people presuming that non-binary people will always look androgynous, or you'll be able to tell if someone's non-binary, because this is why I'm happy that it's becoming more normal to, like, list your pronouns or ask mm-hmm. people's pronouns, because you can't assume people's gender. And I think some people honestly think that's not true. People are like, no, like, I will know from looking at someone what gender they are.
And it's like, people don't know. Like, you know, there was a prominent trans woman who is a YouTuber who is very controversial, but generally I think does a net good, tweeted about how she finds it very hard in feminist spaces where they obviously, you know, they make a big deal out of doing things like pronoun circles, and mm. she kind of feels like it's because she's there and, like,
yeah.
they're clocking her as trans.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's one side of it. And then there's the side of someone like me who, if that isn't done every single time, my identity is literally just not, you know, I'm referred to incorrectly throughout. And, like, I'm not the person who would ever instigate correct those people. Conversations or correct yeah. people. So it's like, you know, I see both sides. And I think that's why it has to be a thing that is done 100% of the time, because otherwise mm-hmm. you risk alienating, you know, this other is people. The thing.
It's like, when you're trans and you don't want to put your pronouns in your email signature because you think it will draw attention to the fact that you're trans, because mm-hmm. you might be the only person mm-hmm. in your office who does that. It's something that, like, needs to be incorporated, but mm-hmm. also it's just like, wouldn't you rather just, like, know that you're addressing someone correctly? It's like knowing that you're saying someone's name right.
Yeah, like, and I have no qualms, like, for me at work, like, as a vet, sometimes people's pets have unusual names, and I have no qualms in, like, clarifying the pronunciation of someone's pet's name. And it's like that, like, clarifying the way in which you refer to someone. You can just say, oh, can I just check? Or, like, oh, sorry, nobody's, you know, we were introduced, but I didn't catch, you know, your yeah. pronouns or whatever. Like, cool, fine, perfect. Like, it's really easy. And, yeah, just not just doing it to people who are androgynous or people mm-hmm. who don't read as cis or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just making sure that you clarify everybody. There is a big culture shift ongoing at the moment. Mm-hmm. And obviously things like Instagram, having you put your pronouns in your bio, like, it's a huge corporation and, you know, whatever. But at the same time, like, I guess it is a sign of how mainstream these conversations are saying, are becoming. There's two sides to it always, isn't there? Like, rainbow capitalism and pinkwashing and that kind of thing. But then also, like, making it easier and safer for people to live through the world.
It's like a very low effort thing that people can do. And it's obviously not going to magically make your space or your workplace magically trans inclusive, but it's like, that's something that people can hopefully easily get their head around.
Yeah. There was a good piece as well for Refinery29. It's actually got two authors, but I sort of know one of them, so apologies mm-hmm. to the other whose name I'm not sure of, but Saibo Sullivan did a good piece for Refinery29 recently, and interviewed my partner for this, which is kind of how I was aware of it, but on people changing their pronouns in the workplace, and this is specifically about people who use they them pronouns. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. So if you're looking for some kind of advice on, you know, either supporting people doing that in your space or kind of looking for experiences on doing that yourself, it might be a useful thing to have a look at.
Also, we love Harper. I feel like I need to shout out Harper because they were so nice to me when I did my, like, Grinch episode.
Harper loves the Grinch. Did we tell you about Christmas Eve when I just adopted a new cat and he escaped on Christmas Eve? And I was like, I'd literally taken him home on the 17th. So he'd been in my house a week. Mm-hmm. He'd never been outside. And it was like pitch black. It was like 10 o'clock. So I, like, hunted around for a bit, but couldn't find him in the dark and was like fucking freaking out. So we just watched The Grinch, which I'd never seen before. And yeah, right at the end, at the, like, emotional bit, Goose came back into the house and I was like, it's a Christmas miracle. So The Grinch is just like a magical Christmas miracle movie to me now.
Yeah, the power of The Grinch can summon lost pets.
Yeah, honestly. And yeah, 6 months later, Goose is just chilling.
I love it. Okay, let me see what's on my little list. So I thought it'd be good for us to talk about how we conceptualize femme for ourselves, or mm-hmm. maybe when we kind of, like, started identifying with it, or, like, seeing it as something that fit mm-hmm. us. For me, I think it was kind of a light bulb moment. It was with my demonic ex, so fuck them. But also, like, this was one good thing that happened. But while I was at uni, I always, like, overdressed for basically every occasion. Mm-hmm. And people were always like, why are you wearing that? Like, I would just be wearing, like, a fur coat or, like, weird makeup and, like, dresses all the time. And it made me feel really self-conscious because I felt like people thought that I was, like, vying for attention or something. Or, like, vain, which I am. But it was just kind of like, I felt like the straights weren't getting it. They were just like, oh, she obviously doesn't get the vibe for this occasion. Like, she's gone too far. And then my evil ex was just like, oh no, like, you're just super femme. And I was like, oh yeah. Mm. Like, I just felt like, okay, someone, like, people are going to get the vibe I'm going for and aren't going to think, why is she wearing that? And then I think when I started going to, like, gay bars and stuff, and there'd always be people, like, just wearing some, like, unhinged outfit. I was just like, okay, like, yeah, like, this is fine. And I do love dressing up, and it's like, I was trying to think, like, has being in lockdown made me feel any different? Because I'm not getting dressed up. And I think in some ways it's made me feel, like, less attractive because I'm not, it's like the way I perceive myself is myself, like, dressed up and, like, doing a look that's, like, based on something or, like, inspired by something. And then it's like, that is not my everyday reality. So I do find it hard sometimes to, like, combine the reality with the vision, I guess. But then I'm just like, it doesn't matter because it's, like, mostly about your personality and, like, how you feel.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I've also, like, never really seen it in opposition to, like, my partner, or, like, I've never bought into the whole, like, femme butch thing, even though it's, like, I really fancy butch people most of the time. But I think it's never occurred to me that it's, like, transgressive or outside the box to be, like, femme for femme or, like, fancy people, like, across all, like, spectrums. So I think in terms of, like, being bi and being femme, I think there is a freedom to, like, express however you want, and the, like, pressure I felt when I was a teenager to look gay, I think now I've kind of realized, like, the people who are gonna get it will get it.
I think you and I are both very, like, different examples of being femme. Like, you tend to be, like, I think more polished than me, and I'm very much like, it's femme because I say it is. To bastardize, was it Tracy Emin? I don't know. But yeah, I think it's really interesting what you say about, like, feeling that kind of loss of self and, like, queer femme identity in lockdown. It definitely relates to one of the things that I thought we might talk about, which was that article about the queer pandemic haircut by Kate Raphael.
Oh my god, yes.
There was so much discourse about this article on social media, and a lot of people kind of mocking this bisexual woman whose straight boyfriend gave her a haircut, and she said, you know, like, oh, it was a queer haircut and it affirmed my identity. And she said the decision to cut my hair was less about being visible to the world and more about being visible to myself. And I thought it was really sad, actually, the way that a lot of queer people reacted to that. You know, a person called Anwen Kya, whose handle is K-Y-A-T-I-C, wrote a good response to it that was like, a lot of people have dunked on this who have themselves had their own haircuts and named those as queer and gay aesthetics. Specifically, she said, I'm thinking of the people I follow who are saying, lol, look at this idiot bi woman reducing her queerness to an aesthetic, when they're the exact same people who constantly post selfies of how gay they look in their cigarette pants or with their new undercut. And I think there's a lot about being bi, specifically in the article that Kate Raphael wrote, but about being femme as well, that's like very, it mirrors second wave feminism and this kind of, you know, demonization of femininity as seeing it as kind of an artifice, as like a waste of time and energy that could be better used, like changing the way that people view women and, you know, view femininity. And I guess, you know, through some kind of second wave lesbian feminism, like how they view queer people. But yeah, I mean, for me, femme is kind of a complicated thing because, as I said, I feel like I will always be perceived as femme, even when I don't necessarily aim to present myself as such sometimes, like because of the way my body looks and things. And, you know, calling myself femme was kind of a way of making peace with that. You know, I find things like wearing nice makeup as a way of like self-expression very important. And you talk about like your femininity or your femme identity not being defined in opposition to a partner. And for me, definitely it stands alone. And there was a quote from Janice Luna, "Femmes are not objects, we are subjects in our own right." And I feel like being femme for yourself as opposed to in opposition to a butch or a masculine partner is very much that. But I still feel the subject of my own femininity, even if I define it in opposition to a partner. Like,
yeah.
I don't tend to find other femmes attractive. I tend to be interested in more masculine people, be they men, be they non-binary people, be they women. And like the kind of appreciation from someone more on the masculine end of the spectrum of like the aspects of my femme identity is really important to me. Like kind of the understanding and appreciation of the things I do to be and present as femme, you know, like... I don't know how you turn up looking like that, but I'm glad that you do, kind of thing.
Oh, we love butch appreciation.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, again, that is very, like, second wave lesbian feminism. And I talk about this as, like, lesbian feminism as a theory, not, like, not denigrating any, you know, specific group of people for saying this beyond, like, the people saying this in the 80s, to be, like... You should not value, like, kind of superficial appreciation. Like, that's not feminist. And it's like, actually, it's fine.
When you're talking about the haircut thing, it just made me think, like, I think bisexual women have so much anxiety about how they present and how they're perceived. Because it's, like, you're always worried that people are going to see you as an imposter. Mm-hmm. And, like, you don't really belong in that queer space. Mm-hmm. Or it's like you want to be seen as queer, you want to be perceived in a certain way, and the easiest way to do that is through dress or visual cues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then visual cues and dress are demeaned and seen as just non-substantive, is that a word?
Like, yeah, shallow, like insubstantial and shallow. Yeah, sure.
And like, oh, you're trying to appear that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
but I think the same is seen. It's kind of a triple attack on bisexual femmes, because femininity is seen as like, yeah, as I said, like an artifice, like womanhood often, whether or not that's something that comes into play in your identity, and bisexuality, you know, is also seen as like false and duplicitous. So it's kind of like you're the triple threat, you know?
Yeah, I think like this is why I liked the like online femme article so much, because it was talking about like if you make this straight femininity versus queer femininity setup, it's always gonna align being femme with being closer to straight womanhood, which is seen as like not stylish, not like evolved, not feminist,
not disruptive.
Yeah, like, not calculated. It's like, oh, straight women just, like, turn up like that and they don't question, like, the way they present their gender. Mm-hmm. Whereas queer people, like, cultivate this, like, ironic femme style.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was kind of, like, a light bulb moment for me, because it's like, if you're kind of demeaning any form of womanhood, that's not good for anyone, because, like, femmes are already, like... marginalized in other ways, so like going after femme aesthetics and acting like it's not as queer as presenting in a mask way, or like making statements that are like, oh, femme people will never have to deal with this or this, and femme people are straight passing. It's like you can be femme and still be really visibly queer to straight people in a way that makes you vulnerable to homophobia.
And I think that's also particularly erasive of trans femme people. It's all, a lot of this critique just completely ignores the fact that, like, trans people and particularly, like, femmes of colour and particularly black femmes, their femininity is seen as, like, deviant, punishable, compounding, like, visible queerness. Yeah, I feel like a lot of this kind of half-baked criticism of, like, oh, femmes are straight passing, bisexuals are straight passing, just... you know, completely ignores so much of the spectrum of like who can be femme. It's one of those things. It's very like, it's such a straw man. It's like they've created like the straw femme, and they're kind of reinforcing the exact same thing that they think they're critiquing.
Yeah, and it's just like there's like having this idea of like natural femininity versus like constructed or like self-aware femininity. And it's just like queer femme identity shouldn't rely on like rejecting quote unquote traditional femininity, because there's nothing wrong with femininity. Like
Yeah, exactly. I think, like, you know, definitely it can be like a deviant or a disruptive femininity, but to be honest, embracing femininity, like, uncritically is deviant in itself. For instance, even straight women aren't encouraged to do that. And it's, this is such a basic take, but, you know, think of all the times people talk about, like, oh, throwing like a girl, or, oh, she's just so, like, girly, it's insufferable. Like, all those things that are completely normal to hear amongst straight people, you know, still reinforce being and loving being feminine as inherently incorrect.
And it's like misogyny still exists, so taking that stance and being like, oh, it's so queer and progressive to, like, think that straight women are, like, tacky and like there's certain vibes or, like, ways of being femme that, like, aren't subversive or aren't queer. It's like, who, it's so gatekeeping and just like it makes, this is why people feel like, oh, I'm straight passing, so my identity isn't valid, or, like, my experience as a queer person isn't the same as someone else.
So fucking sad seeing, like, Gen Z bisexual femmes replicating this absolute fucking nonsense they've been spoon-fed about, like, you know, being straight passing and what access they're allowed to have to the queer community. And it does make me feel, you know, sad to have not been louder and sad to have not mobilized more of the incredible, like, people I know who have stopped me from falling into that trap, you know, like, as someone 10 years older. I think, you know, you kind of touch on gatekeeping there, and there's just so much gatekeeping discourse around the identity of being femme. Whenever I tweet about being a bisexual femme, there's always someone in the replies, like, fucking going for it. It's baffling. I've kind of done as much research as I feel I can on, you know, the history of the term and whether I feel comfortable using it, because obviously, like, I don't want to tread on anyone's toes, and there's often this kind of, well, that's a lesbian-only word. And I think it's just nonsensical, and it completely ignores, you know, this term, as far as I can understand, came up through, like, ball culture in New York in the 20s and 30s. And a lot of the people who were using it were queer men. It's just bonkers to be like, this is only for use by this specific group of people, when actually, like, that's not even, you know, historically accurate in any way. Like, yeah, like so much of the language that we as, you know, white queers use now, at the end of the day, like, its roots are in, like, working class queer and trans people of colour's use, like, particularly Black and Latinx people. And for then white British queers to turn around and say that they're the ones who get to gatepick and choose who can use this and who can't is just an absolute nonsense.
I'm happy that you brought this up, because it's, like, I think it's so important for us to kind of clarify that, like, if someone's trying to make you feel like you can't label your identity in the way that you feel comfortable with, because they're saying that's only for lesbians. The fact that there's discourse that says, like, oh, bisexual people shouldn't use butch and femme, they should use, like, stag and doe. Oh, and I'm like, okay, but no one fucking uses that. And, like, this isn't Bambi, and it's not true that we haven't been included in, like, the history, because it's, like, I've read, like, a book about, like, LGBT history that, like, sidelined bisexual people and basically said that, like, lesbians led a movement, and it's, like, yeah, they might have been, like, members of it that were, like, well-recorded that were lesbian, but, like, saying that, like, a group of lesbian-only people, like, started something, it's just, like, that's so unlikely. Like, lesbians didn't just, like, come out and say, we don't want anything to do with bisexuals, like, from the beginning of time.
It's, I mean,
like,
they did say that in the 80s, to be fair. But yeah,
I hate the 80s. For real. I hate 80s fashion. It's so ugly.
Yeah, 80s fashion and second wave feminism can get in the bin. I wrote down a little bullet-pointed list for fighting back against that gatekeeping, if you know, someone comes up against it. The origin of the word bisexual in 1866 first was used to mean intersex, and then later was used to mean, you know, how we understand it now, sexual attraction to, well, we would say probably more than one gender, but in this instance they would say both sexes, which is ironic when they've started talking about it meaning intersex. But hey ho. And, you know, lesbian at this in this kind of time, sort of around the turn of the century, was a word to describe anything that we, I guess, would call, like, I hate both of these terms, but, like, women loving women, or, like, sapphic people. Mm-hmm. That lesbian was kind of an umbrella term for those people. And, you know, butchers, in as this kind of community grew, were viewed as, like, the true lesbians. And I say that as, like, lesbian in the sense that we would use the word now, meaning, you know, like, specifically attraction to women or to non-men, however people choose to define it there. And femmes, historically at this point, were often more behaviourally what we would call bisexual now. And, you know, were able to kind of move between, like, queer and sort of normative heterosexuality. Obviously, butchers can be and are bisexual. Like, that's kind of the flip side and isn't my area of expertise. Well, not that even any of this is my area of expertise. I'm just an enthusiast. Historically, femme identity and bisexuality are kind of inextricably linked. And that's obviously not to say that, like, exclusively lesbian femmes don't exist and haven't existed. Mm. Like, they do. But, you know, it's I'm kind of arguing the side of pushing bisexuals out of something they've always been a part
always
of is,
been a part
is
of, yeah.
harmful. Sort of 1892, neurologists were first using bisexual as a pathology, and the 1960s was about when the usage of bi became common in a non-academic context. So, I mean, that's my parents' age, you know, that's living memory. I think it's interesting, like, one of the most famous bisexual activists, now please feel free to cut this if I say her name wrong, but Lani Kahumana, previously identified as a lesbian, like, during the second wave feminist movement, and then she mm-hmm. she fell in love with a man, and she really struggled with coming to terms with her bisexual identity because of knowing that lesbian feminists would perceive her as a traitor to the cause. So, yeah, you know, even someone now who we regard as a sort of very key to the bisexual movement that exists now, you know, she was struggling with this that long ago. So, like, it's okay to struggle with this stuff, but also it's okay to be like, I know who I am, and that's the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Also, like, when you're on the internet and you're reading all this stuff, it's like, some of these people are, like, 13 years old, and they've just, like, absorbed all this information from the internet. And
I blame TikTok. Are we old now?
I'm like, the teens have got it wrong. No, not like that. I just mean, like,
yeah, yeah.
When you're young and you're first coming out, like, you can't critically pick apart all this stuff you're hearing about queerness because you don't know. Like, yeah. You're looking for that. You're looking to the internet for information because queerness is excluded from mainstream culture. Like, you're kind of doing your own homework. Mm-hmm. So I totally understand why people get this anxiety about, like, oh, well, I've seen this person say that I can't use that.
And like you said, this homework is hard to do because of the years of erasure. And, you know, we talk about, like, my erasure since the dawn of, you know, queer theory. But, like, also, I think it's important to, like, note the, like, racial and class dynamic of that erasure. Like, the majority of people producing widely available queer theory are white middle-class academics as well. And, like, communities use these words, and the words that these communities grow out of, and in some cases were stolen from. Like, there isn't necessarily a sensible written history of how mm. things were happening. Like, you do to some degree have to piece things together. And yeah, some of this stuff was within living memory, but, you know, some of this stuff isn't. So,
and we also have to remember that Margaret Thatcher literally was like, don't tell anyone about the gays, they don't want to know.
Yeah.
So that probably set us back.
And while we're here, can we just talk about the fact that the Tory government in fucking 2021 is trying to do the same thing? So please do make sure you're keeping an open dialogue with your Member of Parliament regarding, you know, these things. Liz Truss has retired the Equalities Committee, and there's a lot of support for LGB Alliance right now, a newly recognized charity that is basically just trying to cut the T off the end of the acronym and take, you know, their whole thing is opposing gender ideology, when honestly I would argue that cis heteronormativity is the real gender ideology at play. This history is repeating itself, and in sort of gatekeeping amongst queer communities, we're just facilitating that by widening these divides within our own small circles. Which
I just think I don't
is poop.
It's like I don't fully understand what place it comes from, and it's like it obviously comes from a place of anxiety as wanting to have your stake in queerness and be like, my queerness is valid, and that relies upon other people's queerness not being valid. Like, it doesn't really make sense. Like, it's not, it's only ever going to be harmful to put the focus on excluding people and viewing that as something that is like paramount to safety for the queer community, because it's like actually inclusion is the thing that creates safety and difference is the thing that creates safety.
So, I think also, like, and this is in some ways a privileged take, because I know that maybe if you're younger and you don't have an IRL queer community, like, it's hard, but like, get off the internet, connect with queer people if you can safely, because it is so like invigorating, and you realize that nobody actually gives a fuck about this stuff in real life. People care that you're working together towards similar material causes, whatever that is. You know, if you're volunteering for a local charity, or, you know, even if you're just a bunch of queer people doing something completely different. Like, I went to a queer rock climbing club on Monday.
Like, I love it.
Just because, why the hell not? That's in Huddersfield at Free Climb, if you are a northern queer. It's on Monday nights. I took a lot of time off the internet over the past few years, partly because of biphobic harassment, and yeah, just connecting with queer people in real life and working on strengthening like the queer friendships that I have.
And also
saved,
like, once
my brain.
Once you have those like strong and trusted queer friendships, when you see things that make you feel like uncomfortable in your own identity, or like, oh wait, is this a thing? Like, I didn't realize this. Because sometimes you're like, oh my god, maybe I just like never knew that this was offensive, or like obviously there's stuff that you're learning all the time, and like it's good to have someone to be like a reality check to be like,
to like figure it out with you.
It's really difficult.
It takes practice. It really does. And it takes having people you trust to use as a sounding board. And some of my closest friends are lesbians, and some of my closest friends are bisexual, and figuring this stuff out with them has only affirmed who I know who I always kind of knew myself to be, but, you know, it strengthens it. I definitely, you know, I think we talked about this briefly. I don't know if it's in my document at all, but like, friendships between femmes are important and magical, in my opinion.
I love it.
Just think it's really great to have those friends that you have an ongoing text chat with, where you send each other memes and cute clothes and talk about how we're all going to change the world for the better.
It's beautiful. I know. And like, it does like break my heart when people message me and they're like, I don't have any queer friends, and like, I'm trying to come out, because my experience was basically that somehow literally everyone I was friends with was bisexual. Like,
I'll be your queer friend. I didn't have queer friends until I was like 20, 22. And yeah, like, if you're a baby queer in Manchester or nearby and you feel lost and want a pal, like, you can message me. We can meet up. We can go for, I don't drink coffee, but something that won't make me shit, you know? like, we can get a fucking bubble tea or whatever.
No, I was thinking, like, oh my god, like, I need to make, like, the bisexual agenda friend finder app, but then I'm just like, everyone's so socially awkward that like no one would use it, and like everyone would be too afraid. They'd be like, oh my god, like they're too cool for me, I can't be
it would just
with
be
them.
Me yelling in a room full of frightened people.
So, like, anyone want to come to rock climbing?
Yeah, please.
I guess, like, yeah, femme friendship, it's like so integral to me, because it's like, I've never been in a group of gay people where I felt uncomfortable for being femme, or like invalidated for being femme, and I think like that has made it so that's something I don't have to struggle with. The main thing for me is like, I am like invested in being desirable and trying to like separate like white supremacist ideas of what is beautiful and what is attractive also from like what straight men find attractive. To try and like express my sexuality in a way that I think is hot, but then also you have to walk down the fucking street and get harassed by men.
Yeah.
I find it more scary to me when I feel visibly queer, because I'm worried that if men start harassing me, it might take a turn if they realize that I'm not straight, because it's like, they don't like that. Like,
men don't like femininity that isn't for them.
Yeah, but also it's like they don't respect femininity even when it's straight or like catered towards them, because they see it as like
the most this is I guess goes back to what I'm saying, like the most palatable kind of femininity is still seen as like worse than masculinity and like a transgression from the ideal.
I saw this like TikTok that was like a quote from a book that I've ordered from the Bookish Type. I can't remember what it was called. Let me go on my Facebook one sec. But the quote was basically saying, straight men supposedly love women, but everything they love and respect is masculinity. Mm-hmm. Like, they look up to men, they admire men.
This is the one that's like, straight masculinity is homoerotic.
Yes. And I was like, oh my god, it's fucking true. Because it's like, all the investment men have in, like, female sexuality is, it's almost like it's always degrading. Like, it doesn't... Mm-hmm. It's like it's never coming from a place of like appreciation or respect. Like, and that's where for me it's like having a butch partner who like finds stuff attractive about me that I don't think is femme or attractive. Like, I have super hairy legs, and like for me I'm like, that's jarring with my aesthetic, like that's not attractive. But then it's like having someone that does find that attractive and not in like a fetishizing or like objectifying way.
While we're talking about this, it's fine to want like your femininity to be fetishized and like,
oh my god, yeah,
or for like to like want to experience degradation like as a femme, like within like a consensual relationship.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of stuff being like a powerful like hard femme is like a really like cool thing right now, you know, like hot lesbians who step on necks and crack skulls with their thighs, and it's like, it's also okay to be like a little femme subby bottom as well.
It's like so hard for me because it's like I want to look hot but in a way that straight men can't see me, and gay people are like, oh yeah, she looks great, like it's so that doesn't exist. Okay, the book is The Politics of Reality by Marilyn Fry. This girl just read out a paragraph from it, and I was like, it's so fucking true. Like, men, straight men who supposedly love women, where is the love, guys? Like,
for real.
We're not seeing it.
While we're talking about, like, desirability and men, I think another kind of important myth in some of the discourses that we are addressing is this thing of, like, you know, this pushback that bisexual femininity is different from lesbian femininity because it still caters to men. And it's this idea that, like, as a bisexual, you can't, for some reason, you're not given the opportunity to opt out of that. And it's like, nothing about my femme identity is for men or for being attractive to men. It's about me and how I feel in myself. People are like, oh, bisexuals need to learn to stop centering men. And
oh my God, I fucking hate that shit.
You're the one. You're the one. Centering men in your definitions of bisexuality. Yes. Like, my bisexuality doesn't center men. My bisexuality centers myself.
I know. And like, it's also like, yeah, like, women are taught for their whole life to cater towards men, and that their attractiveness is defined by certain beauty standards that basically, like, fetishize girlhood and, like, youthful beauty and all this stuff. And it's like,
it's wild that we blame bisexual women for that.
I know, but also it's like, even someone who's lesbian who literally has never found men attractive in their life, like, their ideas about what attractiveness is will be shaped by misogyny. And that's 100%. Not on them to be like, oh yeah, I know what that is and I can see it and I can reject it. Like,
yeah, every time I see it, it just makes me sad and tired. I'm like, you have such a fundamental misunderstanding of how anybody's sexuality and, like, you know, the interaction of kind of sexuality, gender identity, gender expression works. Like,
and it's also like, you can want to be attractive to men.
Yeah, that's allowed. That's like, fine.
That's not something that, like, opens you up. It's like, oh, well, you set yourself up for this because you wanted that. Like, I don't understand it. It's like,
And then, you see people talking about, like, oh, bisexuals who, like, you know, bisexual women, bisexual femmes, bisexual non-binary people, like, whatever, however people head that up, who are in relationships with men or, you know, more interested in dating men, like, you're still queer. And then everyone's like, why do you need to tell them that? Like, that's affirmed 24/7. And I'm like, oh, it's not, God, yeah, though. Like, if you've come to your bisexual identity, you've obviously, like, grappled with it. That's not the only way you experience sexuality. And then you kind of want to come to the other side of that and be like, cool, I've figured out I'm queer and this is how it's going. And, you know, Shiri Eisner calls this double discrimination, I think, in their book Notes for a Bisexual Revolution. Robin Ox has talked about it as well. She did a great graphic recently, talking about, like, the impact of, like, homophobia and biphobia on bisexuals. It's that, like, double dose of rejection, being shut out and isolated from either side for daring to be like, yeah, I'm attracted to men as well, so what, like, that's part of who I am. Bisexuality is, like, either not transgressive enough because it's too close to heterosexuality, or too transgressive and too close to queerness. You can never find a happy meaning. A happy medium.
I think it's because it's, like, the way that we have been taught to view gender and sexuality is on this kind of sliding scale from, like, completely straight to completely gay, or man, woman, something in the middle. And it's, like,
yeah,
that's such a simplistic way of viewing things. And if it means that people who are, quote-unquote, in the middle are always seen as too close to one or the other, it's, like, that's not a scale that works.
It's
like
a scale that benefits people who are gay or straight and minimizes, like, bisexual identity, or prioritizes men and women and like, kind of punishes non-binary identity that isn't, you know, exactly that 50-50 split of femininity and masculinity.
And it's also, like, there's no standardized way to be a woman or a man. Like,
no matter
how much they try to, like, I don't want to say it's all constructed, but it's, like, it is. Like, even, like, the idea of looking femme, it's, like, feminine clothing, it's not always been seen that way. Like,
yeah, we both look femme, and we're completely different.
Exactly. But, oh, I want to recommend a YouTuber. So she's called Mina Lay, and she does all these, like, fashion history and film analysis videos. But she did one about gendered clothing and, like, the history of gendered clothing, which talks about how, like, pink and blue were designated as, like, gendered colors, and, like, the fact that, like, babies used to all wear the same clothes, and, like, the invention of gendered clothes and, like, how it's shifted. So it's, like, skirts haven't always been seen as
feminine
for women. Like, yeah, I think it's really interesting to be, like, even if it is seen as a sliding scale, the points on the scale have never been fixed, so
a thing that I have said to many people kind of exploring identity in any sense is, like, there are as many definitions of every label as there are people who identify with that label. My bisexual identity is completely different to anybody else's bisexual identity, like, so is my non-binary identity. Like, your identity as a woman is completely different to any other woman, and, like, even the most, like, average, like, cishet person, their gender identity and sexuality are still distinct from everybody else's.
And it's just, like, nothing gets solved when things are seen as normal versus abnormal, because it's, like,
there is not really any normal.
Nothing is normal.
there's like, this weird kind of mythologized normal, which is also different depending on who you ask.
Yeah. I don't know what else we can say to the, like, the baby femmes that feel they're not good enough.
I read a really great article called The Bisexual to Be Corrected, Interrogating the Threat and Recuperation of Women's Femme Bisexuality. By Hannah McShane. That is an absolute fucking banger. I got a lot out of that. It helps you a lot in understanding that, like, being femme isn't an easy way out. It's not, like, an opt-out. Like, it's still a radical queer identity.
Yeah, I think it's also just, like, you don't have a responsibility to be visibly queer to literally everyone you meet. Like, you can't do that. You can't control how people see you.
Like, it's that fucking meme that's, like, for some reason I have to be the most bangable hottie at the grocery store. Like, that. You don't have to be, like, the most visibly queer person in Tesco. It's okay. just because, like, not everybody is clocking you and seeing you doesn't mean you're any less who you know yourself to be.
I think we need to just, like, accept that straight people don't understand what gayness looks like or
for
is.
Real.
Like, literally, a straight person will see, like, a dyke with a shaved head doing some DIY, and they'll be like, oh, shouldn't your boyfriend be doing that for you? Like,
honestly, it's wild. Straight people don't have gaydar, they have stereotypes, and if they can't see you through the kind of limited ways they have to see the world, that's okay. And queer people, like, also sometimes just don't fucking see what's right in front of them, and that's okay. Like, not everybody has to get you, but also you're allowed to correct people. Like, when I got called a fag hag at GAY with a bunch of my queer friends, like, it's okay for me to say, like, fuck you, I belong here. I mean, also, fuck GAY. I now have a lifetime ban from every branch, so... and the owner is a racist, so I shouldn't have been there in the first place.
I've never been there.
Yeah, don't.
I don't like crowds.
The Cock Destroyers were there, so can you blame me?
Okay, cool. Yeah. I also just think when it comes to, like, clothes and, like, trying to present in a certain way, like, it's okay if you haven't quite figured it out and, like, you kind of feel like there's something missing. Like, it takes
a long
time.
I haven't figured it out. Yeah, like, how old am I? I'm 26. And I just want to burn, like, 80% of my wardrobe and start again, but I also don't know what I want to replace it with. Also, I highly recommend just getting loads of tattoos, and then that makes your body feel good.
I know. God, I want more tattoos, but I'm, like...
I got four in one sitting the other
day. I know. I saw it. I was like, whoa, they did that.
Yeah. And then the next day, I had, like, a breakdown because I was so tired, and I was like, have I made a huge mistake? But no, they all look cool. I'm happy with them.
They do look cool. I love the butt foam.
Also, I'm in cycling shorts and my thighs keep getting stuck to my wooden chair, so if there are any weird thigh peeling sounds, please do cut those out.
Oh my god, just need to, like, baby powder a chair.
Literally. Pre-pandemic people were, like, baby powdering to get into their latex and go to fetish clubs. Now I'm just baby powdering to sit in my kitchen.
If I was rich, I would definitely buy, like, a latex dress.
But I want something so latex hot. So much, but I know I'd be so uncomfortable. And then Harper was like, I think latex is the most disgusting texture in the world. So I was like, okay.
Problem
solved.
That was
a no then.
I like the idea. I bought, like, a latex collar once, but my neck is so small. So it was too big.
That's, like, the opposite of me. I just don't have a neck.
I'm just, like, a little pea head. Also, I was gonna say a joke. I was gonna be like, welcome to the annual FemTop conference.
Oh my god, that was the most hideous laugh. I'm sorry. Fully snorted.
I love it. Okay. I've spread them all out. So, what kind of tarot are you looking for today?
I start a new job on Monday, so some thoughts on new job would be nice. Yeah, I'm at a very transient period in my life. I'm, like, halfway through my ADHD assessment. I had the first half today, and I've got the second half at the end of the month. I'm starting a new job on Monday. I'm looking for a place for me and my partner to move in together. So
that's exciting.
Some thoughts on specifically a new job would be nice.
I'm looking at, like, fresh start tarot spreads. Okay, I think let's do what lessons from your past needs to be studied and integrated. What is my attitude towards learning new things, and where can I direct my curiosity next?
Yeah, that sounds
cool.
Good.
Okay, I'm gonna pick them for you. Okay, you've got lots of pentacles.
Nice.
You've got the Sun, the Five of Pentacles, and the Ten of Pentacles. Okay. So the first one, the Sun is what lessons need to be studied and integrated, but the Sun is, like, a good one. The Sun is joy, appreciation, and success. The Sun, in contrast to the Moon, leaves little to the imagination. It shines brightly, illuminating all in its path. It's generally a positive omen in most areas, but even more so for creative people, people who've had rough and need an energy shift, and people who have questions related to health. This is a radiant card guaranteeing that whatever your question, it's aspected well.
Nice. Okay.
It says the kind of darker side is it might be shining light on areas that you're trying to keep in the dark.
Sure. I feel like that's generally a good place to start from, though, isn't it? Like, you have had that light shone, and now you know the things. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, take them and build on them.
It says, the sun is generally a very positive card for manifesting and pulling what you want into your life. I often see it as the King Midas card, but that story has a dark side too. You can have too much of a good thing. Okay, well, I feel like this is relevant to starting a new job because it's like, you've understood that what you need is something different.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like willing to do the work to move into a better place, which you are now hopefully moving into.
Fingers crossed.
Okay, and it also has a promise of family, warmth, and community.
That's what I'm really looking for, because I was really stressed and worried about leaving my job I've just left, because I really get on with most people who work there, and the people were one of the reasons I loved it. But my new job I'm starting is a much smaller team, like a third of the size, and one of my friends works there, so yeah. I'm hoping. We're all going to go and see Peter Andre together in September. Oh, we've already got tickets.
This is the best, bonding experience.
Yeah, honestly. Job. I'm, role-playing a straight person.
Go see. Peter Andre is, a gay icon, isn't he, though?
I feel like a gay male icon.
Yeah, I guess. He was married to Katie Price, who's, the most femme lesbian I've ever seen in my life.
Did you... I can't remember if you watched Drag Race, but Bimini Bombulash... Sorry, that was a cat sneezing in the background. Bimini Bombulash did Katie Price on Snatch Game, and it was phenomenal.
It was great. And it involved a velour tracksuit, which is my favourite fashion item.
And, the one about, walking into the stable and seeing her horse cheating on her again... And the classic line, the nipples are the eyes of the face.
I love it. The nipples are the eyes of the face.
It really just spoke to me. I would love that on a t-shirt. Bimini, if you're listening.
Maybe I can make you one for your birthday. We're so far away from that, though. I'll have to make you one as, a pride gift.
Oh, honestly, it's Pride Month, so I'm do I need to log out of all social media for the next 30 days?
Yeah, I'm trying to be good. I have ordered... I'm gonna do, a highlight post with, loads of, queer-owned Etsy shops and stuff like that, because I'm fair enough, if you have a shopping addiction and you want to buy stuff in Pride, that is valid, but at least try and make it, of more... I think, I don't know. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably not gonna buy some, tacky Starbucks rainbow cup, but maybe you are.
Did you see my thing that happened on Etsy yesterday?
Yes! Because Olivia was like, oh my god, did you see that thing that happened to Pip?
Yeah, it's the first time I've ever cancelled an order on Etsy. But I was like, not today, bitch. On the first day of Pride, you are not speaking to me like that. But yeah, and then because I posted about it, I had 50 quid's worth of sales yesterday.
Oh my god, perfect. See, this is the thing, turning down something doesn't always mean, not getting what you need. Yeah, basically, yeah. Someone was just a rude bitch. Because they were like, when's my order coming? I ordered it 5 days ago. And you're like, yeah, if you read my shipping instructions, it's going to take this long. And they were like, please never say as per to me again. That is so demeaning.
And I'm sorry, I think some of it is just Americans. Because I'm imagine someone kicking off in the UK about being spoken to like that. It just would not happen. Yeah, maybe I was a bit brusque, but I provided all of the information at fucking 1 a.m. because I just happened to check my phone and I was like, oh, I'll just respond to this query. And then I woke up to a 4-paragraph lecture on how the language I use is
it was just
left a bad taste in their mouth was the phrase they used. And I was as per the item description. Because basically I was trying to say so she can't be well, that information wasn't there. I'm like, look, it's here. I literally just couldn't be doing with it. And yeah, I mean, I don't really need customer service advice. I've made 1,000 sales on Etsy and have an average 5-star rating, so I think I'm good.
I just love that you were like, I refuse to be treated like a naughty school child.
That's literally what I was like. You know what, you don't get to speak to me like that.
You were like, I went to private school, I'm not having people treat me like shit anymore.
Yeah, honestly, I in my ADHD assessment today I cried talking about how my friends treated me as a institutionalized neurodiverse person. So not today, Satan. Okay. Yeah, I think I learned. I think that was a really good first pull. Sorry, we've.
I think that's a good card. Really yeah. It's okay. This is just our mode of being. But the second one, I'm not sure if it's going to make complete sense. The second one is about what's your attitude towards learning new things.
Mm-hmm.
But the Five of Pentacles is apparently about like heartbreak, feeling isolated and disconnected, feeling lost and alone.
I mean, like that's generally what my learning experience has been like over the past few years. So. I feel like, yeah, that's not... I feel very academically insufficient sometimes. So, yeah.
It says, depending on how you see this card, there are two different outlets for your feelings. You can use the stable earth energy to figure out how to move yourself forward, or you can just stop. Stop comparing yourself to other people, because where you are now is where you are. If you can change it, this card is a necessary message to do so, but if you can't, you're only going to hurt yourself by staring in vain in what other people have. A lot of my friends have ADHD, so I've been seeing, like, so many, like, ADHD infographics and stuff on Instagram, and I think one of the hardest things is just, like, feeling like you're not meeting up your own expectations or other people's expectations, and you're always comparing yourself to others. And I think part of it is thinking, oh, well, if I didn't have to deal with all these barriers, I could do this and this and this, and, like...
For me, like, realizing that I have ADHD in some ways was a release, because it was, like... Oh, it's not that if I just tried a bit harder, I could do this. It's that sometimes I can't, and sometimes I have to find another way, and sometimes I have to ask for help. But yeah, obviously, because I didn't have a formal diagnosis, I hadn't disclosed that in my previous workplace. But if all goes to plan, I should have like formal recognition thereof by the end of this month. So I'll be able to like be open about my limitations in the workplace, but also be protected. Because I'll formally have, like, confirmation that I have this disability.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that might be really good in terms of, like, getting, you know, I think, yeah, recognizing my limitations in learning new things is actually probably also a good and useful thing for me.
Mm-hmm. And, like, not trying to recognize your own strengths and weaknesses without being judgmental about what they are.
Like, giving yourself the grace to just let it be the way that it is.
Yeah, and obviously, like, everyone feels... It's so intense starting a new job, and I think now is, like, a more difficult time because everyone feels like, oh, my social skills aren't as great. I don't know what I'm doing, and, like, change is so challenging and difficult. So I think, yeah, we need some earth energy to calm us down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
who doesn't? But then also being, like, understanding of what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And not comparing yourself to people who've been there for, like, 10 years or whatever.
Yeah, for real. I think a really nice thing in my new workplace is it's smaller. I'm going to be the third vet there. And there's, like, the boss vet. And then the other employee is the same level as me. Like, we qualified from the same university the same year. So, like, hopefully she's not going to make me feel completely, like, out of my depth like I have done previously. Because we're both going to be figuring stuff out.
That's good. I hope it goes super well, and it's, like, a smooth transition as much as it can be.
Thanks. It's nice having someone to talk to also about, like, re-entry anxiety, because I know you struggled with that. Like, it's something I have was really not expecting, but it's absolutely, like, kicked me in the teeth recently.
I'm just finding everything so tiring. Like, I did my first day at work in real life, and I felt fine. I was like, this is going so smoothly. I don't feel anxious. Like, the COVID stuff in place is making me feel safe. And I walked home, and I was like, oh, it's sunny. I'm going to walk the long way. Like, I feel great. And then I got in the door, and I was like, I have to lay down for, like, 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I was just so tired.
I can't even explain what I'm anxious about, because it's not... It's not COVID so much anymore. It's just, like, finding what normal is again.
Yeah, I think the good thing is, it's, like, before when I was socially anxious or anxious about situations, I felt like I was the only one feeling like that, whereas now it's, like, totally normalized, like, to be a weirdo or, like, not know how to handle yourself in certain situations, so...
Everybody's become a recluse and done a lot more introspection.
I know, I'm like, welcome to my life. I was getting, like, the hermit in my tarot for, like, 2 years before this happened, so...
You were just preparing.
I was just, like, getting ready. Let's see what the last one is. Where can I direct my curiosity next? Okay. Ten of Pentacles. This is one that Olivia gets all the time, and she's like...
Is it money?
A successful little bitch. It's about family legacy and inheritance.
Yeah, it is about money. See, I'm learning from your podcast. It's an educational experience.
Oh my god, I love that. It's because this one just seems to always come up for me.
That's funny. I'm taking a pay cut to take this job. So maybe it's meaning richness in other areas.
Richness in having a social life and also not hating your life all the time.
Yeah, hopefully. And like maybe also a sign that like working hard will pay dividends in the long term, even if it's not an immediate like cash money situation.
Let's see what Cassandra says. She's talked about the traditional thing, which is basically like a guy who becomes old and rich, leaving all his money to his kids. And she's like, yeah, that's beautiful for business people, but I don't really. Let's just say, we can go back through everything we've talked about, community, chosen family, and the life we've built for ourselves out of weed and rubble. This is a beautiful story, and its transformation in its truest sense. When this card comes up for queer movers and shakers, it promises that everything they're trying to build will fry. Wait, I can't talk. Everything you're trying to build will thrive long after you're gone. Just say, one thing the weirdo teen goth wannabe in me has loved about this card is its comfortable relationship with death. We may be nearing the end of a cycle, yet we're promised joy, love, and those will carry our name forward when we're gone. Okay.
Yeah, I
so
like that.
Basically, yeah.
Investing in building something.
Yeah, and also, like, understanding that things change and it's not always a loss. The pentacles remind us how much work goes into the seemingly basic act of resistance. We not only have to survive as queer people, but also survive capitalism and all of the other oppressing factors that are not kind to marginalized people. The Ten promises us that through taking the rest of the suit's advice, we reach a point where bare living in our lives is enough. And it's enough resistance to inspire someone, and it's enough perseverance to thrive, and it's more than enough to leave your community when you go. And I guess it makes sense, because you've got the Five of Pentacles, and then looking forward, you're, like, transitioning into a ten where you've, like, succeeded.
From a five to a ten, baby. That's the energy I'm trying to break. I fucking wish. I feel like a solid four at the moment on a good day.
What? No, you're hot.
God, I saw my mom for the first time in like 9 months, which is always guaranteed to make you feel disgusting.
It's hard. Okay, I feel like it does make sense when it's all together.
Yeah, I like this as a journey for me. Manifesting abundance.
Yes. I just watched a roast on... Oh my god, so there's this YouTuber called, like, Amy Oardman or something, and she's Australian, but I really feel like she looks like you. Like, she reminds me of you. But they did this roast of her, and they were like, every night you're crying while lighting your success and manifestation candle. And I just thought that was so funny. I was like, that is me.
I'm Googling her.
She just has a pip little face.
Yeah, sure, I see it. Is. It's the kind of, like, round, like, squarish face.
And, like, because she has, I don't know, just her mannerisms remind me of you.
Yeah, I will take that as a compliment. She can join the family of, like, Rebecca Black and all my other clones.
Oh my god, well, she's, like, she used to date Rebecca Black.
What?
Yes.
Because so I she looks to... like, they both look like me, and they dated each other.
You are the product of those two women. I love it. Yeah, like, I don't know why she came up on my YouTube. I think it was, like, she did a YouTube video with Rebecca Black, like, how we met or something. Yeah. And I was like, Rebecca Black is hot. I'm gonna watch that.
I have a lot of feelings about Rebecca Black's current incarnation.
Do you like it?
Yeah, she's so hot.
Okay, good.
But then I'm also like, it's not fair. People used to say I look like weird, uncool, young Rebecca Black, and nobody says that anymore.
I mean, she's definitely had this. Great. I do feel like being compared to people is never great, but it's good if they are hot.
Yeah, honestly. I mean, Rebecca Black now, I'm fucking laughing, but nobody compares me to her anymore. But yeah, this Amy Oardman person, she's hot. I will take that 100%.
She's hot, and she's Australian.
Yeah, I feel like I have quite Australian energy. I say the word cunt more than anybody else I know. I went to school in Australia very briefly. I feel like...
Oh my god!
Yeah, okay. When I was like 16, I feel like maybe that's the one thing I took from it.
You were like, saying cunt is okay. It's valid.
We're both valid. This Pride Australia Month, you're okay. Valid. Even if you're just an Australian who says cunt all the time.
Oh my god, if you're Australian and you listen to the podcast, please message me. I love looking at the countries that listen to my podcast. And I guess Australia must be on there, but maybe it isn't.
Yeah, I mean, I want to lean into being everybody's favorite non-binary MILF, so.
Oh my god, I love that.
Yeah, like, I'm never gonna have kids, but I have a lot of cats.
Yeah. Okay. I think we're, like, on time for once in our lives.
Nice.
So, yeah, the only thing I wanted to say for my agenda was that YouTube channel, because I just love her videos. They're really well edited. She has a video about her, like, Victorian thrifted wardrobe, and she looks so good.
Yeah, I have a really quick buy agenda this time. So my first thing on the buy agenda is called 5 for 5. So that's, like, the word 5 is in the number, and then 4, not the number, F-O-R, and then 5 again. And they're 5for5.co.uk. And it is a fund run by a trans woman in the UK for trans women and trans feminine people and causes. And there is a monthly pot that is divided between, I think it's 3 individuals and 2 causes a month. And so it's a very easy way to give to a mutual aid fund that distributes your money to several causes. If you are a trans woman or trans feminine, you can get in touch with them, and they'll put you into their database to be selected for, you know, being a recipient in the future. That's all completely anonymous. As a donor, you can see the causes, you know, the charities that are selected, but you can't see the individual people. So yeah, I've been giving to them monthly since, I guess, the beginning of the year, about when they started. And I give them £25 a month, so that's £5 each for 5 causes. You can start at £5. It's a low effort way, and it kind of takes out the thing for me of feeling like I'm kind of cherry picking who I donate to, because I just give the money to the pot and then they split it up for me.
Yeah, I think it's really good, because, like, for ages I was hesitant to sign up to anything that was, like, a monthly rolling thing, but because it's, like, an affordable amount for me and it's giving to, like, multiple things, it feels like it's covering a lot of bases, and it's not like, oh well, because I'm doing this monthly donation, I don't have anything I can give to other things that pop up.
Yeah.
And also, like, a lot of things rely on consistency, so they can't plan ahead if they're not sure what their funding will be. Like, if they get loads of exposure 1 month and they get loads of donations, but then they don't get anything for months and months, it's better to, like, be able to give consistently if you can afford that.
Yeah, if you can consistently give a small amount, I think that's often a better way to do things than give lump sums irregularly. Obviously, one size does not fit all, but I've kind of been trying to read a bit recently about, like, sustainable giving and how to maximize the effect of money you donate and causes you give to. And yeah, small amounts consistently seems to be a good way to do that. My number 2 is also something to donate to, and this is a charity I volunteer for called Abortion Support Network. We are a small charity based in the UK, and we help people across Europe access abortion in countries where abortion is illegal or restricted. So a lot of the time that involves helping people get, like, medical abortions by post, but also it means literally flying people to other countries to have abortions. And that has become significantly more costly through COVID because of, you know, costs of testing, travel rules about, you know, how long you need to be somewhere or all those things. People have to stay in hotels. They can't stay with our volunteers because, you know, that was literally illegal under lockdown rules a lot of the time. Obviously, Brexit has increased some complications. And then countries like Poland have tightened their abortion restrictions, which is shit. But yes, according to American data, bisexual teens require abortions at higher rates than heterosexual teens. So abortion funding and abortion access are queer and specifically bisexual issues. And yeah, Abortion Support Network is explicitly queer and trans inclusive. So yeah, we're a very small charity and we could really use any help we can get right now. So yeah, that's obviously a very personal one for me. But we help a lot of people and that number is only going up.
And it's also sucks. Like, really nice to be able to know that the charity you're supporting is inclusive of, like, trans people and queer people, because it's just good to know, like, yes, this is a charity that I feel comfortable supporting, because, like, something that I've become more aware of, like, in the last few years is just the amount of charities that really don't help people. Like, they just raise a load of money. Like, a lot of the most well-known ones, they do a lot of fundraising, but they don't actually put that money into the communities they say they're going to support. So it's like, when it's something small and you kind of can see what they're doing and the work they're doing,
We connect people to money so that they can have abortions. That's it. Our running costs are very low. We only have a couple of paid staff members, and pretty much everyone else is a volunteer. Also, please follow us on Instagram. The actual volunteering I do is I am one half of the Instagram, and it's run by two bisexuals. So, you know.
Yes. And also, like, engagement on posts is super helpful. So just, like, commenting on things. Yeah. And liking things and sharing things.
We, obviously on Instagram, once you get 10,000 followers, you get the swipe up ability. And that really increases the amount of donations people are able to get. So, yeah, if you are able to follow us on Instagram, that helps us get closer to that milestone.
Yeah, thanks. I can just list everything that you mention. I do it throughout the episode, but everything that we talk about, I'll put in the bio, and I don't think my links are clickable because SoundCloud is annoying. But if you want to DM me and say, oh, you mentioned this, I can just send you a link in a DM.
Sure. Cool. And then my final thing isn't a donation thing. My final thing is that my friend Lo Shearing, who is an author, has a book called By the Way, as in B-I, The Way, coming out later this month on the 21st. It is a young adult guide to bisexuality, and actually probably covers some of the stuff we've spoken about today in terms of, like, dispelling some of the, kind of arguments and misconceptions that are really rife, particularly, I think, amongst young queer people at the moment. And yeah, you can pre-order it from the Bookish Type because I got in touch with them and asked them to stock it.
Beautiful. And also, if you're someone who doesn't have the money to spend on a book, the Bookish Type have, like, pay it forward. So I'm not sure if you can do it online. You probably can if you message them. Mm-hmm. But in the shop, they have, like, a board and you can, like, pick up a... It's like a voucher almost.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we love supporting our friends. And especially when your friend writes a book, like, wow, you did that.
Yeah. Yeah. Lo in lockdown. So Lo finished their book in lockdown and then also made a podcast about radicalization of women by the alt-right, which is a phenomenal listen. It's called The Feminine Art of Radicalization, I think. Appropriate given that we've been talking about feminine arts in this podcast. But yeah, they're just a phenomenal bi activist. They spearheaded the Be With The T movement, that marched at Bi Pride in London in 2019. They founded and run the Bi Survivors Network, which is the only bisexual focused survivors organization in the UK, and they wrote the Do Better By Us manifesto, which is a guide to covering bi issues for media. So yeah, just an all-around phenomenal person who inspires me every fucking day. But give them their money, buy their book. They've just got a deal for another book that's going to be a bi anthology, so that's really exciting. But yeah, they're Lo Shearing on Twitter, if you want to check them out. And as I say, their book comes out later this month.
Exciting! And yeah, that's so good, so because cool. Like, when I did my podcast with Ray from the Bookish Type, she was saying that a lot of the time it's, like, people coming in looking for stuff for, like, their kids. So it's really good that they'll have, like, a bi-specific thing that's, like, suitable. Because it's like, oh my god, when you Google, like, 100 best queer books when you're a teenager, and it's like, they're all so depressing. Like,
yeah, honestly, like, I think it's such a niche that doesn't exist as a, like, young person trying to figure stuff out. Like, I was reading books that were like, having crushes on other women doesn't mean that you're not straight, and I'm like, well, actually a lot of the time it does mean that. Just, I'm so excited for my friend. I get, like, super emotional talking about it, and I think hopefully this book will change lives. Like, I'm not overselling it. I think, you know, work Lo has done has changed my life and plenty of other bisexuals, so I suspect I will not be the last.
And this is, like, the perfect present for that cousin that you think might be gay. Even if they're not, at least they can just learn loads of stuff about bisexuality.
Yeah, I definitely have one of those cousins. I don't know if she's quite old enough yet, but...
I mean, you're never too young to realise that you're gay.
This is true. My ex came out at the first time, age 9.
Because I have, like, no memory because I'm depressed. It's like, I don't think I was existing at age 9, you know?
Sure. I have too much memory, but I definitely was kind of a late bloomer in terms of any kind of sexuality.
I was born yesterday, like, genuinely.
Why is that, like, a air sign vibe?
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, part of it is, like, half my chart is Libra, so...
Literally.
I don't know. I was wearing a lot of flares when I was a kid. I think I was giving off, like, a lot of bisexual chaos that my parents didn't know what to do with. But, yeah, I love that. I love it when people, like, I'm in a few, like, bi Facebook groups, like, mm-hmm. the This Is Bi Culture one. And I really love it when people are like, oh, I'm a bisexual mom and my kid has just come out as non-binary or bisexual or gay. And they're like, my kid is literally like 6 years old. It's just like, truly, if you provide the right environment where people don't have to go through years and years of like shoving their identity into like a dark corner. Yeah, kids can realize they're gay. Like,
yeah.
It's amazing.
Like, as a young kid, I, like, wanted a boyfriend. So, like, why is it any more or less weird for me to want anybody of any gender?
I know. This is, like, the thing. It's, like, making queer stuff 18 plus. Like, always seeing it as, like, adult-only content. It's, like, so damaging. Like,
yeah,
there's, like, family-friendly and kid-friendly queer content. 100%. And it's sad when it's, like, seen as something that kids shouldn't be exposed to because it's like inappropriate and it's just like that's sad.
Come, if we're talking bad discourse, I guess it all circles back to the fucking kink of pride discourse, doesn't it?
Oh my god. Well, I like never get involved with that because I'm just like, I don't go to pride because I hate crowds, but like if I saw someone there wearing like a full gimp suit, that would not offend me.
Yeah, I'm just like, a kid can see someone in like a full like pop mask, and if you're like, oh, they're just playing pretend, kid will be like, cool, bye. We project our own thing, our own shit onto kids.
It's weird. Like, I really understand, like, having a fear that kids might be exposed to things that they feel uncomfortable around. Mm. That's different from being like, queer things are unacceptable for kids.
But then so much of, like, the stuff I was exposed to as a kid that was, you know, inappropriate, in air quotes, the reason I felt uncomfortable about it was because I knew that I'd be in trouble if someone knew.
Oh my god, yeah. It's like the whole
thing. If I hadn't had that guilt or that shame, I'd have been like, yeah, this is fine.
You can, like, educate your kid about sex and relationships in a way that's appropriate for their age, but means that they have an understanding and they feel comfortable, like, asking you questions. Because it's, like, the solution to, like, oh, I feel uncomfortable talking to my kid about sex can't be, I will never do it. Like, I saw this thing that was, like, my dad's complaining that school shouldn't teach kids sex education and their parents should do it. And then I said, well, you've never talked to me about sex education. Do you know what I mean? It's like, the solution can't be like, well, I'm uncomfortable with that, so they should never know anything.
But it's like, you don't have to necessarily have those conversations. If you can direct them to resources, you know, buy them a fucking book about bisexuality for teenagers. Like, there are other ways to do it. Like, and if you don't give them that information, they're going to go and find weird, like, piecemeal stuff on the internet and by reading their granny's erotica. Not that she wrote, just stuff that she had in the house.
Yeah, the stuff about kink at Pride just mirrors, like, respectability and, like, it's like, well, it was literally illegal to be gay, like, not long ago, so...
While people are still saying that being trans is a kink and they don't consent to participating in people's kink in public, then I don't think... Like, as in, that's what transphobes are saying.
I've actually never heard that. That's crazy.
But it's like, well, it's this kind of the like, TERF gender-critical rhetoric of, like... Yeah. I will not buy into your, air quotes, fantasy of, you know, referring to you correctly.
Like,
and as long as there are people doing that, then there are people who will use arguments about, like, kink at Pride to erase
also, it's like
trans
kinks,
people.
Kinks can literally be, like, someone can literally get off on, like, feet. Something that is non-sexual. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you're not allowed to have feet at Pride. No toes at Pride.
And yeah, everyone send good vibes to Pip for their new job.
Thank you very much.
And if you have more femme questions, like, I forgot to do a kind of, I did like a what does femme mean to you, like, literally months ago, and I probably screenshotted it and lost it, but a lot of people were kind of saying it's more about how it feels for me and the way it empowers me and makes me feel confident than how others see me. And I think that is important. To distinguish.
I've got a bunch of links to things about femme that we maybe didn't discuss but that kind of informed a lot of the things I said today. So, I mean, you've got that document, but I feel like they're almost a bibliography of what I've spoken about today.
Yeah, we can, if you want to, like, do some research about anything that we've said, we have, like, the massive Google Doc and...
Yeah, I can make that Google Doc public.
Beautiful. That was our femme seminar, basically.
Yeah, I guess the last thing I want to say is, like, reiterate, I'm not an expert. I'm a femme bisexual who has done a lot of reading about this for my own personal interest. But as I say, like, there are limitations to my perspective and to the research I've done. And I would encourage people, you know, to keep exploring beyond that, both personally and academically, if yeah. it's something that interests them.
I think something that, like, has made me feel, like, less rigid about what I see as femme and not is just, like, following a load of queer people that aren't anything like me, but I mm-hmm. think are, like, really cool and inspiring, mm-hmm. because it's, like, once you take away some of the limitations that you have about what certain words mean or imply, like, you create a lot more room for yourself. And it's, like, we don't put this pressure on straight people to have their whole, like, being figured out and, like, be able to explain it.
Yeah.
Like, it's seen as, like, the blueprint or, like, the way that things just are.
It's about you. It's all about you. And, like, to some extent, I use labels because I know other people will understand them. Like, that's how I came to bisexual, because I was just sick of explaining other labels. But that's also okay. If, like, being sick of explaining yourself is part of your identity, like,
and you can also have, like, the long story and the short story, because, like, I don't feel like sitting around with straight people all day telling them that, like, I see myself as, like, a femme sexy librarian. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you don't have to, like, be fixed to the same thing every time.
Yeah.
And also, people shouldn't be asking you to explain yourself. Like, it should be, that should be, like, so you can understand me experience, mm-hmm. not so you can accept me,
yeah,
or validate me. What a beautiful time. I'm so happy I've actually recorded a podcast, guys. I'm sorry I was, like, MIA for Mental Health Month. It's because mental health. And my new neighbors love screaming, but I think they've been quite good today. I haven't been hearing any yelling. Beautiful.